Live from Blake Street Tavern in the center of the biggest party of the year. Here's The Drive. It's football at 4 on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Yeah, we have a huge crowd here at the Blake Street Tavern, the Yeti tailgate party with Coors Light is rolling, has been since early this morning. The Coors Light Beer Garden is flowing. It's DMAC with Troy Rank. We're happy to be here, and the Rockies are losing 6-1. So we'll see what happens on that, and we'll walk you through it. But people are in a good mood here, Troy, no matter what. And we'll talk more details about this Rocky game as we go. Is that Tony Walters?
Your guy.
My guy. I do love him. I'm not going to lie. But, yeah, let's see that pop fly to right field. You know, maybe he'll jack one right here and prove us all wrong. That'd be amazing. Or maybe the ball bounces off somebody's glove. And yeah, that's a strike, Tony. All right, anyways, John Elway traveling to North Carolina to work out Daniel Jones. What should we make of that?
That there's a couple of things you can make from it. It looks more and more likely that they will draft a quarterback in this draft. I think it would be between the second and fifth, sixth round. Also, the idea that if they trade back, DMAC, and pick up an early second-round pick, a guy like Daniel Jones could be available there. A guy like Will Greer, another one they've met with, could be available there. I'm with you on this, that if you want to go Daniel Jones and Will Greer in the second round, I mean, we've gone down this road with Paxton
Lynch. Well, you're not going to get Daniel Jones in the second round.
I think he could be available late first round, early second. He's not great. I mean, his college statistics are pretty mediocre, honestly. He's not bad. He doesn't have arm strength. That concerns me at the pro level. But my point is, if you think that Daniel Jones or Will Greer, one of those guys, is going to be a chance to develop into something and you want to take him early in the second round, keep that option open. And you could trade back. But if you're going to draft one between the fourth, fifth, and sixth, to me that's a waste of time, because we've talked about that player better be appreciably better than Kevin Hogan. Because you can get a guy in the fourth round who's going to play on your special teams and be a reserve that you need. I don't want you to get a quarterback that's not going to play.
You could draft Mac Wilson and have your starting inside three down linebacker in the second round as well. So if you make a decision on that, that comes with its own set of problems. And to me, there's no logic in drafting a quarterback, period.
Yeah.
Period. Because you're giving up too much things that you need to win with Joe Flacco in the first, second, or third rounds. And then if you get to the fourth round, I agree with you. I mean, really, seriously, what is the difference between Clayton Thorson and Kevin Hogan? And frankly, who cares?
It's negligible, so it's not worth doing for me.
I agree, because then you can find your special teams guy. Then you can find somebody who is going to really help you out in a, Cody Latimer sort of way, even though Cody Latimer was taken in the second round, that wasn't the intention. But he essentially gave you the value of that. I'm sorry, I just gotta laugh as Major League Baseball players throw the ball around and make errors that high school teams should easily make. I say 12-year-old teams should make that play. But we have it!
We got Valleca Walters on the corners.
It's awesome. It's all happening.
Yeah, he hits a number to the pitcher that Maeda just
turn.
Absolutely.
Should be a double play.
Yeah, well, you can't short hop a guy on a double play.
No, that was
a terrible throw. He threw a freaking split finger to second base. Probably still should have caught it, but it was a tough one.
Out by 5 feet. And maybe it's not a double play, but it's an easy force at second.
I'm pretty sure his porn star mustache created a gravitational force that pulled the ball down into the dirt to create basically a short hop.
But here we are.
First and third.
No outs. This has to be two runs.
In this inning.
The minimum amount of runs is two runs, and hopefully more with the heart of the order coming up. The end. And Charlie on the first pitch.
Flies
out. I can't really
do
play-by-play. Not deep enough to tag. And there you go. That's a wasted at bat by Charlie Blackman. There you go. That's a great example of how Charlie's got to be better. Got to be better than that.
Yeah, either he got jammed or he was out the end of the bat, but
it's the first pitch.
Stop.
If you're swinging on that on the first pitch, that means you've identified the ball and you should drive it. The end. If you're protecting with two strikes, fine. There is no excuse on the first pitch if you're, dead red that you're not driving that ball. That's a bad, terrible at bat by Charlie Blackman. Sorry, that's just what it is. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't produce a run. It's a weak out, and it didn't even give you a chance.
Well, in the case here,
so,
I've talked about with Dahl, He's going to have to pick him up because, Charlie, that's a bad situational at bat. That's what we talked about earlier in the show. Charlie was 90 points lower last year with runners in scoring position. Again, he's not trying to fly out there, but to D-Mac's point.
He's trying to elevate the ball, drive the run it.
When you're swinging at the first pitch, it's usually, you know, we say like a beach ball, or it's you're sitting dead red. It's not a pitch you want to pop up. But this is a pitch that Dahl, you got to get one home here. You can't.
Yeah, I'll give you another one. It's a 2-0 count on David Dahl. If this ball is a strike, it should be a run. Yeah. If this ball is a strike, there should be a run right now. And this is the way baseball goes. Baseball is about little situations that all add up. So, it's a swing and a miss.
It was a fastball, chest level. I mean, that's your go swing on 2-0.
I got it.
And he hacked it. He missed it. The problem with guys like Maeda is they pitch backward. 2-1 here, this could be a splitting. That's the issue. And he knows, the experienced pitchers, they prey on the anxiousness of hitters in this situation. So I bet he's either going to elevate the fastball or throw a changeup. Threw another fastball. Man, that one hurt, D-Mac.
So fastball, there you go.
Hittable fastball on 2-1.
You go from a 2-0 count to a 2-2 count, and you're in a world of hurt. And this is where my Spidey sense tells me there's about to be a double play right here. Because now you don't want to strike out if you're Dahl. You're probably a little bit anxious. And hard grounded to short, Troy. Well, he's a lefty, so maybe it goes to second base. But, I mean, you know, you can feel it coming. And it's a strikeout. That's terrible. So here we go with our best hitters just having two terrible at-bats. And by the way, that was the ball. He swung at a ball outside the zone.
Did I mention they're going to miss Daniel Murphy?
Wow. All right. Well, sorry, as we nerd out on baseball. Now, maybe Nolan saves the day. He just sits it into, you know, Todd Helton hamburger land, you know. But and that would kind of save the day and would ultimately be what you wanted anyways. And that could happen. But I'm just really disappointed to see moments like that at this. And this is why that series against the Brewers was just so miserable. You know, there was opportunity after opportunity where your best guys just didn't come through.
Well, and that's why they went out and got Daniel Murphy. He grinds out at bats. This is where Nolan, you know, wants to be the man. I mean, and I believe in these situations that you've got to get more protection from him in the front of the lineup. Man, Maeda is just toying with guys. He threw, three straight fastballs to K. David Dahl. He has thrown what looks like his slider to get back into the count with Nolan.
And by the way, Walters got on a bloop hit to left, I think, which, you know, typically is just an out. And it just plopped in front. It wasn't like a hard hit ball. And then there's only runners on first and third because of an error by Maeda on a ball that was hit like 15 feet. You know, so he is absolutely dominating. He got himself in trouble because of just like a couple of bad breaks, not hard hit balls. And, you know, is he going to strike out Nolan Arenado here too? Oh my God. If the Rockies just get no runs at all, it's a marathon, not a sprint, Troy. But this is a blast of the past of where the Rockies were against the Brewers that we thought was, you know, I don't even know what Bud Black can do.
Well, as a manager, your everyday lineup, that's a front office situation where the manager plays a role is in using his bench and his bullpen. And if your everyday lineup stinks as a manager, it's not like you're doing a bunch of coaching at the major league level. Either your top eight guys, position players are good or they're not. And your big guys have to come through. And Nolan's battling here. He hasn't thrown him one fastball. It has been slider splitty. So Nolan's seeing it now. He's up to, this will be the sixth pitch of the at-bat. But this is a critical moment of this game. Bottom of the fifth,
yeah,
down 6-1.
Yeah.
Crowd wants a reason to get involved.
At least they're making Maeda work a little bit as he's up to 86 pitches. And you say, okay, well, that's a positive. Now, you got to get, I mean, at least one run.
Well,
but this, by the way, this is why Nolan Arenado's paid all this money. Right here.
Well, he's led the world in RBIs like the last 4 years. This is where he makes his money.
Right.
The issue is they hit 197 on the road trip, and now they're at one run at Coors Field. They got to get going offensively. I joke about caffeinating the Broncos offense. They got to get going offensively.
Yeah, in this
game,
they've had the bases loaded, and they've had runners at first and third with one out. No outs.
This has turned into a nice at bat. He's gone from 1-1 to full count. Hasn't seen one fastball. So I imagine here he's sitting on a slider or splitty. And can he make a difference right here? If he hangs it here, you know what they say. You hang him, we bang him. Three-run home run, 6-4, crowd's into it.
Yeah, you know.
If he strikes out, it's going to be a buzzkill for a crowd that needs a reason to get excited.
It will be. And, you know, this is also with, I mean, it's runners on first and third. Maeda doesn't really have to come over the plate with this pitch either. You know, there's some wiggle room here if whoever's batting behind Nolan can deliver as well.
Yeah,
and that's exactly what they did.
Threw him a changeup in
the
dirt.
Yeah, because who's up after Nolan today? I'm not even sure.
Should be Story, right?
Well, okay. So we'll see what happens with the bases loaded. But again, second time the Rockies have had the bases loaded today. Second time, and so far they've only got one run out of it. They're down 6-1. We'll see what happens. But when we come back, I want to ask you a scenario, Troy. What if Daniel Jones is drafted at 10? What is the ripple effect? What if that happens? We'll get there next.
Rockies fans, this Sunday we have a special treat for you. Listen to the Rockies game right here on The Fan. Sandy Clough anchors our pregame coverage at 3 o'clock. Then it's Rockies and Dodgers live right here where we're committed to more Rockies talk all season. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3. The Fan. Live from Lake Street Tavern in the center of the biggest party of the year. Here's The Drive.
Well, just to update you, an awesome day down here in Lodo, but not great effort by the Rockies here as they're losing 7-1. Russell Martin just went yard. I think the Dodgers have 3 home runs today in this game. 3, I think. Muncy's got one. Martin just got one. And
Clay Bellinger.
Bellinger's got one. So the Dodgers have more home runs in this game than the Rockies have all season.
That's not good, right? So they have 3, and the Rockies, wait, let me do the math, have 2?
Yeah, the Dodgers got more home runs in 6 innings than the Rockies have. And what's this? Kind of a wacky double.
I don't know much, but this Ambien sponsored offense
by
the
pitcher.
Rockies.
The pitcher just went, got a double. Maeda just got a double.
Your guy. I told you those pitchers should hit. This Ambien
that is so terrible.
Sponsored offense.
Yeah.
My word, do they need to wake up.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest problem, too, is that the Rockies had runners on first and third. They're down 5 runs. It's time to, they've got the heart of their order up. Charlie Blackmon hits a weak fly ball on the first pitch, not deep enough to drive the run in. David Dahl's in a 2-0 count and ends up striking out. And then Trevor Story, pathetically, goes down with the strikeout looking. First of all, you got 2 strikes on you. Let's just start there. And then, you know, you don't know your strike zone.
Well, the dollar
bat, I mean, that is pathetic.
The dollar bat hurt because he swung at 2 pitches out of the zone.
Right.
You know, it's Story. He's vulnerable at times to off-speed pitches. Maeda has a killer slider / slurve and a really good splitty. And if you can't be patient with him and get him up, it's one of those things if it's real low, let it go. Like that splitty ends up in the dirt. It's not a hittable pitch. And Arenado basically got to a count, and then they intentionally walked him without intentionally walking him. But that's why, to be right, D-Mac, they need Murphy. They need protection for Arenado because did you just saw there, once it got to a full count, what did you say?
I said they're going to walk him.
And they did. That's
they
the
did.
Problem.
Well, they weren't going to give him a pitch to hit.
Exactly. You if know. They bounced the splitty up there, that if he wants
they're not
to
that
swing
afraid
it,
of Trevor Story.
Right.
Right.
And Story's a great player. Right. Fantastic player. But they've got to have somebody start coming in through in those positions so you have a reason to pitch to Arenado. Otherwise, they're going to just see if he'll chase and try to bait him.
All right, let's have some fun here.
Okay.
Daniel Jones, who the John Elway traveled to North Carolina to work out, and they also traveled. Now, the difference is they can meet with you at the facility, but they can't work you out. But if you go, and I have no idea why these rules are like they are, but if you go to them, you can go through a workout. So at least there's, I mean, I think it's fair to say there's at least significant interest in Daniel Jones. And I think it's also fair to say if you want Daniel Jones, you probably are going to have to spend a first-round pick. I understand you said he might drop to the second round. But for the sake of argument, let's assume we've got to spend a first-round pick on him. What would it mean if the Broncos drafted Daniel Jones, Troy?
That they see him, they see him as the quarterback of the future for next season. Not 19, but in 2020. That it would signal that they see Flacco as a bridge quarterback and that they would be prepared, if everything went according to plan, to turn to Daniel Jones as the starter in year two of his career.
So, we would... All right, so when does Daniel Jones have to be starting as the Denver Broncos quarterback?
Well, when to take him at 10?
Yeah.
I think it would be in year two. At the very latest, like four or five games
like
into year
Mahomes,
two.
Week one?
I would think it would be week one, because I would believe they would move on from Flacco at that point, D-Mac.
I would agree.
Because they're not going to pay Flacco $18 million a year with the realistic possibility he's going to get beat out by the kid.
I would
and
agree.
And Flacco, as we've talked about on the show, is really on a one-year deal.
So, as soon as you were to draft Daniel Jones at 10, if that were to happen, Flacco would be DOA.
That's how I would read it. Now, again, we've heard this with Paxton Lynch. We've seen that these plans don't always come to fruition. But if you're drafting him at 10, it's with the idea he is going to start in year two.
I will, on draft night, we have great draft coverage plan. We're really looking forward to it. We'll have details coming out here relatively shortly. Troy, I will just laugh. I will just laugh after the position the Broncos were in last year, for them to not do what they should have done last year and then do what they shouldn't do again with the quarterback this year, putting Joe Flacco in an impossible situation. He just moved here with his wife, his five kids under the age of six. He's working for Phil Longford and peddling T-shirts on the side. He's Mile High Joe. And we're telling him, you're no different than you were last year with Lamar Jackson. Well, we're expecting that team to... I'm telling you. Plus, there's no way that team's going to make the playoffs.
Plus,
there's no way.
The idea that talking to draft people I really, really trust, they say there's not one quarterback that would be in front of any of them that were drafted in the first round last year other than Lamar Jackson. So, in other words, Haskins would have been basically, the fifth-ranked quarterback if he came out last year. That then Locke would be sixth, and then Jones would be seventh.
No.
Well, actually eighth, because Kyler Murray would go one in this scenario. So would you spend a 10 on a guy that last year clearly would have been a second-round pick?
So when we come back, why is John Elway in North Carolina? I'll give you the reason next.
Live from Blake Street Tavern in the center of the biggest party of the year, here's The Drive.
All right, it's D-Mac with Troy Rank. Now, Troy, what is your Denver 7's Troy Rank? What is your situation? It's 7-1 Dodgers. We're in the bottom of the sixth. Huge crowd, which is great, both inside the ballpark and outside. And your mission here today... thank you for coming by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. I love talking baseball. I love talking Broncos.
Yeah.
But I've said that at some point the Broncos got to figure it out, because right now there's never a postseason for talking Broncos. Never an offseason. They've got the drought. It's time to end. I'm watching this Rockies offense, and it's like Case Keenum suddenly on their team. They can't score. We had a devoted listener come by here, and she said to me, are they ever going to start hitting? I'm like...
It's something.
They should. I mean, they hit 197 on the seven-game road trip, and now they're thrown out of one spot here through six, which normally you'd say, they're fine. Problem is, they can't keep the Dodgers in the park.
Yeah.
Dodgers have three home runs. Russell Martin, I'm pretty sure, started his career with Davey Lopes, Bill Russell, and Steve Garvey. He's hitting home runs. Clay Bellinger has 70 home runs, about as quick as anyone's ever gotten to it in an L.A. uniform. I mean, at this point, the Rockies, they got to get going. They got to find a way to manufacture a couple runs. And it's going to come down to those two situations with bases loaded.
Right.
Where they got one run.
One run out of two bases loaded situations, including, runners on first and third with no outs. And then bases loaded with two outs. Tapia slaps the ball to left, and he gets on. So Tapia's got a hit. Walters has got on. Baleka, who comes in on a very dramatic double switch, he finds his way on base through error.
You can't help yourself with that. But a very dramatic double switch. I'm pretty sure it was like that scene from The Phantom of the Opera.
Well, that's the spot because Tapia is now hitting. So instead of a designated hitter, you have Tapia hitting as a pinch hitter. And believe me, that was an incredible, brilliant managing role that Bud Black decided to hit a lefty against a righty. I mean, I don't know if people can understand how sophisticated in thinking that actually is. I mean, we are in outer space with how to use your five pinch hitters possible in this game, Troy. Two of them are lefties, three of them are righties, and you use the lefty pinch hitter against a righty pitcher. That is amazing.
There are occasions like Yasiel Puig last year couldn't hit righties.
I mean, I have reams of data, analytical data. That's funny. Tony Wilters hits out to shallow right field.
He the shift on Walters. He looked up like, are you kidding me? I'm a 170 hitter. Get Commissioner Manfred on the phone. Anyone hitting below the Mendoza line, you can't do the shift against.
They got the second baseman 30 steps into right field. That sucks, man. That is absolutely a ball that gets by most traditional second baseman. That really does. But when you're playing 30 feet into right field, by the way, how in the world is there even a scouting report that tells you that's how to position Tony Wilters?
And for those of you who are in the car and not watching, it's like when a 9 or 10-year-old kid hits a ball to the outfield for the first time and thinks it's a home run and the kid actually catches it. Yeah. That's the look Wilters and his mustache had as he went across first like, what?
Well, it's even worse.
Why was he there?
It's when the kid on your team who's not that quick hits what he thinks is a single to right field, only to have the right fielder pick it up, zip it to first base, son, you're out.
Oh, my God.
I mean, either way, it's like, oh, I just got a hit. Oh, I'm out. It actually doesn't even seem fair. I don't have a problem with the shifts at all, by the way. I'm fine with it.
Oh, I'm fine with the shifts, too.
And to me, I think that's one of the dumbest things that they want to regulate, say, keeping the shortstop on the... I think that's dumb. I'm all for shifts. I have seen in college baseball this year, like Spencer Torkelson, who's an incredible power hitter from Arizona State, I've seen teams put four in the outfield. Yeah. And they'll just take the second baseman away, and they'll play the gaps in the corners. I love that. Why not? You know, because if he goes, I mean, this is really high-level stuff. But you can see in even Major League Baseball, Troy, why even keep that extra infielder, especially in Coors Field, where you can play the gaps?
Well, again, you're going
to
see more.
Have you ever talked to Bud Black about that?
Not about that. Now, he used five infielders the other day. He brought Desmond in from center. So when they were in that, I think it was a bases loaded situation.
That was like in the last inning, though. That was a desperation
right,
situation.
But they had two outfielders and five infielders.
I saw it.
I have never seen the Rockies go with extra outfielder. I've seen him use Javi Lopez, a pitcher, in the outfield and then try to bring him back in to pitch.
Let's talk about Bellinger, for example. On Bellinger, you play an extreme shift, right?
Correct.
Okay. Well, you think he's going to hit the ball deep one way or the other, and you're leaving an entire side of the infield already open. Why not cover the corner? Why not cover the gaps? Why not tell him, if you're going to hit us, well, he's up right now. Well, let's see where he goes, right? But I like it, and I say, why not? If you cover the gaps, maybe you give up a single. Okay, fine. But you're not giving up a double or a triple, and you're putting him in a different state of mind. And if he dribbles a little base hit, then so what? Now, 7-1, I don't know. Doesn't really matter at that point. But I could make an argument early in the game that you want to force him into a different mental mind frame, and maybe that's the way to go. And you really don't care early in the game if he gets a base hit. Here's how they're shifting it. So there's nobody. I mean, there's nobody at third base at all. If he laid down a bunt, he might get a double right here, Troy. So why even mess around with that fielder? Who is Arenado, I suppose, at short, which is another wacky move. Like, why move the shortstop out of shortstop? Why not just keep the shortstop there and then move the third baseman somewhere else? And it's another kind of crazy thing. But why not just say, forget it, Nolan, I guess, if you're shifted, go to left center.
Well, the risk of injury is real because you know how this works. You put Nolan out in the outfield, inevitably the ball finds him and he pulls a hamstring trying to make a play.
Well, jeez. Put Nolan out there. Well, put out Hampson.
Yeah, well,
put
exactly.
Put out Valaika. Right. Put out somebody else.
It wouldn't be, because like, remember that year?
Not
that,
Nolan, sorry.
They played Michael Kadire at third. Oh, he's like, I can play third. I did it like 3 years ago. First play he got, he dives. He separates his shoulder.
Right.
So
all
you
right,
have to
fine,
be careful
fine,
with certain guys.
Let's get.
But to your point, yes, certain guys are versatile enough. You could do it. It is extreme. You have to practice it in spring training.
Look at that gap in left center right there. I mean, Coors Field is a bit ridiculous when you see certain aspects of it.
If they had known the humidor was going to work how it has, then they would have put the mound, they would have shortened the field. So the basically home plate would be where the mound is. Because now it's normalized the home run to some degree.
Yeah.
It used to be the average score at Coors Field pre-humidor was 7-6 with 3 home runs a game. Post-humidor, it went down to basically like 5-4 with 1.5 home runs. So had they known the humidor was going to work the way it did and it came into play in 2002, they would have made this field smaller. Because that's the issue, is there's too many cheap hits.
Look there, at all that, there it is.
There's, you can't there, cover.
That's an out in Fenway Park.
Right, you can't cover that ground.
It was a base hit to left field. I swear to God, that is a line drive out at Fenway Park. But nope, at Coors Field, all right. We're getting frustrated just because the Rockies are playing poorly. It's every nightmare possible. Starting pitching was abysmal. The hitters that really need to produce did not produce in the right situations. You're giving up home runs left and right to a team when you can't produce your own offense, and it's the Dodgers.
Other than that,
things are fantastic here on opening day. This is The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Live from Blake Street Tavern in the center of the biggest party of the year, here's The Drive.
Yeah, we're on the air.
You're on the air. I'm not on the air. Leave me out of it.
It's D-Mag with Troy Rank and so many great people. We want to thank so many people for coming by and saying hi, and it's always awesome to meet folks. It's a little tricky here today because, I mean, there's a din where you hi, hey, how are you?
Yeah.
Great. How are you?
I just saw Pete, my guy from Longmont. He does the stats for Longmont High basketball and baseball.
Nice.
He is fantastic. He's here with his son.
What do you mean he does the stats?
He still does old school handwritten stats. That then they go back with basketball and then they watch the video to the stats.
Really?
But he's an old school statistician.
Wow.
When I first went to the Times
That's
Call.
That's kind of cool.
I was at the Times Call covering football. I was walking the sideline. You can't always see the yardage markers, and he was the stat guy.
He
there.
Does it by hand?
Yeah.
Pen and paper?
Pen and paper still. Old school.
Wow.
He's fantastic.
Okay.
He's here with his son, so I got to say hi to
Usually
him.
Usually I thought that was just like a mom with the iPhone was doing that sort of action.
Yeah, I joke with him about that, but no, it's just. It works for him still to do it old school, pencil and paper.
And then he just goes back later and...
Yeah, then they enter him into Max Preps or whatever, but he does them old school. That obviously, like every team, we have Game Changer for baseball, and then in stats, they just have to enter him in Max Preps for basketball.
Okay, very cool.
But yeah.
What's he doing here?
He has ticket. He was here with his son, who's a huge baseball
right,
fan.
Here's,
and
by the way...
They left the game early because saw him.
Right,
They were at the game.
Right. Now, this is kind of a funny part. Nolan, by the way, with a brilliant play. Nice pick by McMahon, too. There's a hard hit ball to Nolan, who backhanded it. There's a runner on third. Just missed the tag on Muncy. It was a home run and triple today. Nolan zips it, turns around quickly, zips it over to McMahon, who short hops it. You know, that's an interesting guy, Ryan McMahon. You know, a guy who's very adept playing first base, but has middle infielder possibilities as well. Very sweet swinging lefty who was basically the MVP of spring training. What else do you know about Ryan McMahon?
Well, he was one of the most highly recruited quarterbacks coming out of high school.
Is that right?
Modern day kid. He was a big time high school quarterback. Could have easily played D1 football.
Okay.
And he was a power hitting third baseman.
Drafted out of high school?
Yeah. Okay. And they realized, well, if you're in the Rockies organization and you're a third baseman, you probably should learn another position because Nolan's not going anywhere. He lost weight this winter, D-Mac. to lean out to play second, because most of his career they were trying him at first and third as a corner guy.
Sure, of course.
And then the last,
that's all, he's got to be 6'3", right?
Yeah, he's, like that. But he's leaned out. He's more like 205, because if he was still playing true corner, he'd be 215. But you can't really, it's hard to play it that way at second, especially when it's not even your natural position.
Right, right.
Light on his feet, again, great athlete, was a high school star quarterback. They need him to hit. He changed the plane of his swing this offseason. You know, he's less susceptible to strikeout. So,
had a great spring, didn't he?
Yeah, and I asked scouts today who saw him. I said, listen, was it against guys who are in double A in spring? He's like, no, his spring should transfer at some point. And, man, do they need it, because without Murphy right now, they're top-heavy in their lineup. And you see this. If Nolan doesn't get the big hit, it feels like they can't win. You can't be like that at Coors Field.
Are you scared at all Trevor Story could revert back to Trevor Story of 2 years ago?
He's probably going to regress some offensively, but I'm not scared of him becoming 230 with 191 strikeouts. But could he go to 150, 160 strikeouts and have a lower average? Yes. He still plays Gold Glove defense at short.
Yeah.
But you're right. The way their team is constructed, if he regresses, they're in trouble.
Yeah, bases loaded. Two outs today. They just didn't even... they threw a couple challenging pitches to Nolan, but at the end of the day, with a base open, even though this would load the bases, they had no problem. Maeda had no problem just throwing a ball low. If Nolan took a hack at it, fine. If not, who cares? That shows me they're not afraid of Trevor Story.
But yeah, they're going to challenge him. They're not going to challenge Nolan Arenado. But Trevor, because he strikes out, that's a guy you'll take your chances on with bases loaded. And here Mike Dunn leaves with bases loaded. You realize they don't have an effective lefty, D-Mac. Jake McGee, who's not effective, he's hurt, and Chris Russon is hurt. Their only lefty is Mike Dunn.
Yeah, this game's over.
Oh, yeah.
So now this is the point. If I'm a manager, you know what I would like to do, right? I don't care if I lose this game by 18 runs, to be honest with you. This is one of those moments where I'm tempted to throw. I mean, it's an 8-run lead, so I guess anything's sort of possible. But how tempting is it if you're Bud Black to throw in a position player just to throw the ball over the plate?
I think you would, but you wouldn't do it in the home opener. It's a bad look. The optics of it are terrible. If it's tomorrow night and this happened, yes, you're not doing it in the home opener.
Yeah, because
too many people are here.
Well, we talk about NDS, the home opener, but... Exactly. You know, it is funny because now we're seeing – now, this even happens in close games. Seventh inning, people leave Rockies home openers. They do it every year. I've seen it for 19 years, Troy, at home openers. It is the tradition of opening day. You get hurt early. You enjoy the libations. You stumble into the ballpark. You run out of steam in about the fourth inning. And you start thinking about I-25 on the way home.
I don't feel so good. I'm dehydrated.
Where's the Uber going to pick me up today? You know, can I ride this Lime all the way to Longmont?
Yeah, and you got to make a decision, too, on days like this when I was much younger. At what point in the day do I nap so I can rally again and drink later?
Wow. There you go. Well, there's a Nuggets game tonight.
Well, there
I mean,
you can
sort of tag team this afternoon, I suppose.
So, yeah. So I would say if you've been drinking all day, this would be approaching nap time.
Time to rest.
To rally for 8 o'clock tonight. Just trying to give a helpful advice.
But now, because Tyler Anderson, again, it's these little moments that just add up. Because Tyler Anderson, he got into the fifth, but he could not get it out. So his line goes 4 innings, not 5. So that means you got to get all those outs. And now it's just DJ Johnson's in now. Looks like he just cut down a tree in the forest or something with that beard. The lumberjack.
That looks like the Charlie Blackman giveaway beard.
Can somebody please check DJ Johnson if there's a string behind his beard?
Doesn't it?
It does. It looks like a promotional giveaway. He's got the Gary Kubiak... bear grease to so there's no gray hairs, and it's very thick, very full, very manly. But it's a situation where, well, there's one out, or two outs rather, first and third, top seven, and I can just look at the ballpark. Oh, wow, look how many people have left Troy. Okay, anyways, it's just opening day tradition here in Colorado. People are still here. I don't think we've had less people here at Blake Street Tavern at any moment since we started the show.
If you're wondering, is this an aberration? It's crazy. The Rockies aren't really great in home openers, D.
16, is that right?
16-2 overall in home openers, 15-11 at Coors Field, so they'll, unless something reverses and there's an outrageous comeback, they're going to be 15-12 at Coors Field. The problem, I brought this up earlier, they went 7-13 against the Dodgers. You got to get the Dodgers out of your head if you're the Rockies. Remember how we talked about like the Warriors kind of get in the Nuggets'
head? What do you think it is about the Dodgers?
They're just overwhelming. Their lineup is like a hockey team. They just have lines that jump out. Their first and second lineups that they roll out are better than almost everyone's first lineup. Like, Jock Peterson isn't even playing today.
That's amazing, right?
I mean, they got guys coming off the bench.
So you don't think they're going to miss
Puig? I don't think they're going to miss Puig. They were over Puig. It was time. They're going to miss, you know, Matt Kemp's first half production. Kemp didn't do anything in the second half of the season. I'm just saying they can roll out guys tomorrow that are better than anyone the Rockies are rolling out at the bottom of their lineup. Jock Peterson is off to one of the best starts in baseball. He's not even in the lineup today. That's my point.
By the way, that is exactly how the Red Sox did it, too.
Yes, they just overwhelm you.
Yeah, they got like Brock Holt just hit for the cycle. He's on the bench today.
He's not playing. Well, remember, Muncy and Bellinger were their best players in the NLCS. They got benched in the World Series because of the pitching matchups. And I was like, what?
So the Rockies haven't quite got to that point. The Rockies still do operate in an older school sort of fashion. And I thought we would see a little bit of change in that this year. And the only reason we've seen a little bit of that is because of necessity with Daniel Murphy going out. And even that's been pretty subtle. They just don't have that type of depth. And I'm really not sure who is in the minor. Like, for example, Pat Valaika, huh? Like, he's the next guy. Really?
Well, Fuentes would have been in the conversation. Josh Fuentes, Nolan's cousin, he broke his wrist in spring training.
Dead.
He would have been a guy maybe as a bench bat. They love Brendan Rodgers.
Well, then why isn't he here?
He's just not ready yet. He needs a few more minor league at-bats. Here's the thing. When Murphy comes back, if McMahon hasn't hit during that time, Rodgers could be up sooner rather than later if he's just tearing it up in AAA. You don't draft a guy in the top 10 in major leagues without the idea he's going to start for you.
I know. It's been 4 years.
And, again, if McMahon gets a long run here, a month to hit, and he doesn't hit, at that point they may have to junk it and say, Brendan Rodgers, you're coming up May 15th, whatever it is, and we got to hit. He's that kind of bad. He's still a top prospect.
Okay. I just expected him to make the club this year in his fourth year.
Well, he didn't hit in AAA. He didn't hit last year in AAA. So he needs to go down there and hit. Hits 340 for 6 weeks, then he's going
to
push
him. It kind of goes back to this, and I know he's a top 10 pick, and there's a lot of money. So, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that he did what he did. But then there's also this part of me that says, well, why don't you just go to college? You know, why don't you get 3 years of education, get all those at-bats down there, and then start in Double-A for probably a quicker ascent or maybe the same ascent? I mean, how many 19- or 20-year-old major leaguers are there, Troy? I mean, how realistic is it when you get drafted out of high school at 18 that you're really going to be playing Major League Baseball at 20?
Yeah, that's Mike Trout, that's Bryce Harper.
It's the freaks.
Yeah, Fernando Tatis wasn't drafted, but he came, you know, he got signed as a 16-year-old. It's hard. I mean, when you get to the big leagues at 20, 21, that's typically a Hall of Fame-type talent.
Right, so if you get to the majors at 24, you're fine.
Yeah, it's your prime. You most guys are up that are stars by 23, 24. Anything after 24 is unusual. Like even Helton, because he played 3 years at Tennessee.
Right.
But he got up basically in 2 years in the minors.
Yeah, but that's right, because he had 3 years at Tennessee.
College, right.
So his progression from high school to Major League Baseball was 5 years.
Correct.
And, hey, listen, I don't know. I mean, do whatever you want in life. But to me, to just go to college, spend 3 years developing there, and then you got 2 years to get to the...
reason I would do it is just the lifestyle.
The money?
No. The reason I'd stay in college is you go, let's say you play at Florida.
Yeah.
You get to live at Gainesville or pick Florida State. One of these, pick an SEC school.
Yeah.
Mississippi State, LSU. You get to play there.
Facilities.
3 years. Great facilities.
Incredible.
Great coaching.
I would argue
the coaching's better at those programs than it is at the low level of the minor leagues. It is the weirdest paradox, D-Mac.
Well, there's more money being paid to
right,
coaches
like
at that
you're
level.
Paying like $25,000 to $40,000 to coaches in the minor leagues, and that's where you send your top prospect. What business would do that? My greatest computer programmer, I'm going to send him to the guy that can't do a spreadsheet.
Right.
It makes no sense. So if I'm a kid again, pitchers are different because of the injury issue, so I get it. But if you're a great hitter and you have confidence, I could see, bet on myself, I'm going to play in the SEC. Every Friday, Saturday, guy I face is going to get drafted, and many of those, a bunch of those guys have a chance to be in the big leagues. I get to live on campus, have some semblance of a life, instead of living in, you know, middle of Oregon or Utah or Idaho.
Right.
But no family, no nobody, and half the team is guys, you know, it's just a weird environment. I would go as a hitter, SEC, ACC, and live that experience. And as a pitcher, I would never tell a kid not to sign because of the injury issue, but if I'm a hitter, I would go to college.
When we come back, we'll recap what's going on with the Rockies here on opening day. We'll get through it as they're in the bottom of the seventh. Can there be a miracle rally? Well, we'll find out. John Elway traveling to North Carolina to look at quarterbacks. The Denver Nuggets in action tonight, and your Colorado Avalanche. Wow. Making the playoffs. We'll hear some of those highlights coming up after we hear from Mark Schlereth, who really is not optimistic. Mark, what's wrong?
It's your daily exclamation mark with Mark Schlereth, brought to you by Shomp BMW.
I really have no expectations for this is the first time in history where my expectations for every other team in this town are much higher than my expectations for the Broncos. I just do not think this roster is strong enough. And not only strong enough, Mike, this is an important distinction, deep enough. There's a difference. There's a lot of rosters that maybe aren't the strongest rosters in the NFL, but they're deep rosters. You've got to have to make it through an NFL season, I think you have to have a deep roster. And it means you have had to have drafted and developed well for a period of years to develop that depth so that you're ready to roll.
Mark Schlereth and Mike Evans, Monday morning at 6 on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan. KKFN and KKFN HD1 Longmont Denver. Live from the American Financing Studios. Available on the radio.com app and desktop. Live anytime, anywhere. More Rockies talk all season on Denver's Sports Station. Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.